Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 19th of July 2021. I now declare this meeting open and welcome everyone in attendance. It's great to see some people in the public gallery and welcome to those listening at home via Facebook and YouTube. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. So in accordance with council's policy, I ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you, General Manager. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. In attendance tonight, we have Councillor Sue Bastone, Councillor Gideon Cordova, Councillor Flora Fox, Councillor David Grace, Councillor Amanda Midgley, Councillor Christian Street, Councillor Steve Woss, Councillor Paula Reet and myself, Councillor Joe Westwood. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Mr Gary Arnold, our Director of Engineering Services, Mr David Reeve, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, our Director of Environment, Development and Community, Dr Katrina Stevenson, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Sam Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. I have received no apologies for tonight's meeting. Confirmation of minutes. Do I have someone to move that the minutes of the open session of Council on the 13 on the 5th of July be confirmed as a true record? Moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Reet. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Minutes are confirmed. Workshops. There have been no workshops held since the last Council meeting. Now we move to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? Nope, no declarations of interest. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session? No. That moves us to questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice from the public? Thank you. If you could please move to the microphone and state your name and address.
My name is Jill Hickey.
Thank you. My name is Jill Hickey. I live at 4 Devon Walk, Taroona, and I represent the Taroona Community Association as the president. Council is currently undertaking community engagement on the Council bylaw amendments, which closes today. Of particular concern to the community is the removal of Part 7, Trees on Private Property, from the Health and Environmental Services bylaw, based on legal advice that the Council has received. The removal of this part of the bylaw will have long-term detrimental impacts on the future character and natural and biodiversity values of Kingborough and the southeast Tasmania, and these can never be replaced. My question is, given the level of importance of this proposal, why wasn't greater effort made by the Council to engage with the community, giving the time and consideration required on this proposal?
Thank you. Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, Council followed the processes as prescribed by the Act with respect to community consultation on this matter. We also undertook two Council workshops in relation to the matter. It has been something that we are well aware of the community concern and something that we have tested vigorously with our legal advisers.
I have another question. Again, given the level of importance of this proposal, why was not a second legal opinion obtained?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's not so much a legal opinion as the fact that our bylaws, by legislation, need to be prepared and certified by a qualified practicing legal practitioner. The legal practitioners that we have engaged have indicated that the inclusion of this clause is contrary to law and is not something that they would be prepared to sign off on, given their legal requirement to do so under the Act. The question of getting a second legal opinion is one of how far do you go? You know, we could get a second, we could get a third. We've engaged well-respected legal firm to undertake this work for us. They have consulted broadly within their own firm and are firmly of the opinion that their advice they are providing is correct, and we see no value in getting a second legal opinion.
Thank you. Given the Taruna Community Association and the Taruna Environment Network, have obtained a second legal opinion, I'm wondering, will the Council reconsider this matter in another workshop?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the Act requires Council to consider all submissions made. There's no definition with respect to the manner in which those submissions are to be considered, but if Council considers that a workshop is necessary, then I'm sure that is something that we can do. But as I say, the matter of the consideration of the submissions, there is no prescribed process under the Act.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Do we have any other questions without notice from the public? No. In that case, we move to questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. We move to page 2, questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Grace.
Thank you. Regarding the part 5 removal of the trees, as it's out for public consultation, one would think that, Acting Mayor, this will come back to the table for another decision.
That's correct, Councillor Grace. The public consultation closed at 5 o'clock today, and Council will need to review those submissions.
And vote again. Well, yeah. All right, thank you. That clarifies that. My second, and I've got 3 questions. In March, I raised an issue about plant hire undertaking the works at Adventure Bay roadworks. Could we be please supplied with a copy of the invoices and charges of the plant that was used on that roadworks for the period of the start to finish of that roadworks, naming days, dates, and how much they cost?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there certainly would be some information that we could supply, bearing in mind that some of the information is going to be commercial in confidence, so it wouldn't be something that you would actually find into the open agenda of Council there, but it would be certainly something if you wanted to have some further information about that particular matter that was covered off on some previous questions on notice, then I'm happy to actually provide some of that information back to you.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't understand because there should be nothing confidential. As we have a plant hire register, as I understand, so all the rates are known. I would insist that we be provided with days, dates, and how much it cost for the plant that was on that site from the beginning of May, I think, up until the job is completed. And by the way, I have no problems with the standard of works that's been carried out there. I'll make that quite clear. It's a very good job. moving forward. Again, the Snug footbridge, footbridge at Snug, which is a bridge that was built back when my father and many others worked at the carbide works, and then council replaced that bridge only, 15, 20 years ago. Could I have a costing, please, of A, what is the problem, the structural problem with the bridge? What would it cost to upgrade the bridge compared to what we have in our agenda of 250? And that's only an estimate of 250. That estimate could run up to $500,000 to replace that bridge. So I would like a report on, please, what is the actual structural problems and what would it cost to fix those construction problems as compared to reconstruct the bridge?
I think we'll take that question on notice, Councillor Grace.
And my second question regarding the bridge is the fact that our future character statement, if it carries any weight, and our heritage's infrastructure that we have within our council policies, that bridge has always been a wooden structural building, and it's always fitted within our character statement of Snug, if I could put it that way, Acting Mayor, because it's part of our history back to our grandfathers and our fathers. And
have a question, Councillor Grace?
Well, if we reconstruct the bridge with a new bridge, how's that going to fit in with the character statement?
We'll take that on notice. Thanks, Councillor Grace.
Okay. I think that's all I have tonight. I've been pretty lenient. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm just wondering if Keep Clear could be painted on Sirius Drive, Huntingfield, where Prince Henry Place, Charles Eaton Court and Thistledown Street intersect. At the moment, the cars leaving Huntingfield after school pick-up time form a continuous line across the entrances to these streets, and it obstructs residents from returning home who turn right into their streets. So I'm wondering if we could have a Keep Clear placed on the roads, please.
Mr. Reeve?
Through your Acting Mayor, happy to take that on notice and then see whether that's appropriate to actually have that type of marking in that location.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Through you, my question is about the intersection, street lighting on the intersection of Sandfly and Allens Rivulet Road, specifically on the eastern side, that is the Margate side. My question is basically, what is the criteria that will be used to assess whether or not a street light is needed at that location? What would be the trigger for getting a street light at that location? Because there's already one at the other side of the intersection of Allens Rivulet and Sandfly. So to get the street light at the other intersection, what would be the trigger point where we would say, okay, yeah, we do actually need it? Thanks.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, so for street lighting there, we typically have them mainly in our urban areas. So in the rural areas there where you've got, heavier movements of traffic moving through there or other conflicts with other potentially walking tracks or whatever it happens to be, where there's a need to have some sort of light at the intersection, you may have one at the intersection there. The other thing that we have to take into account there is whether there's actually any power there that's actually easily accessible to actually put a pole up. I believe in that particular case that is not the case, so it would be quite an expensive operation to actually install a street light. Yes, it's about consistency across the municipality as well at the same time. Otherwise, there'd be a significant expense to council if we were to go and actually try and put streetlights on all of our intersections.
Thank you. Is there any way of getting a kind of indicative cost as to to be able to weigh up whether, and just for clarity of the record, I made the mistake of saying there is a street light at the Margate side, I'm talking about the Sandfly side. Is there any way to kind of get a cost, that way we would know whether or not it was feasible?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, but I guess typically what we do when we're trying to actually get designs which are beyond just putting in a street pole there, so it's actually trying to bring power to the pole as well, we would get someone like TAS Networks to do it. That does come at a cost, so I guess it's an exercise that there's a cost associated with actually trying to get an answer to your question, I suppose. It's sort of a roundabout way of actually answering the question there, but it would be more a process we'd go down there if we were quite comfortable and believed that it was one that was definitely warranted to actually have in that location.
Thanks very much. Just, I guess, my final question on that, because it's a bit of a chicken or the egg thing, isn't it? Because we can't find out whether or not it's feasible to get it unless we get the costing to know whether or not it's feasible. I guess a broader question would be, in areas like Allens Rivulet, which are experiencing quite a significant degree of growth, but they're also in a rural area, do we have a kind of policy framework for when we go and retest those things and pay the money to get the costings? At what point? Like, what should we wait for?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, yes and no. So we do certainly evaluate in a non-formal way in terms of particular areas where we know there has been growth and the traffic numbers have changed and or other things have actually changed in the area there. One of the things that we are looking at putting together is actually a street lighting policy, and that will actually be covered in that part of it. We'll make it a lot clearer and provide a lot more understanding to both councillors and the community in terms of when and what type of lighting we would put in different locations.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. If there are no more questions without notice from councillors, we now move to questions on notice from councillors. We have on page 2 a question from Councillor Cordova regarding smoke-free Kingborough Sports Precinct with an officer's response. We have a question from Councillor Bastone on page 3 regarding the Woodbridge Hall roof with a response from officers. A question from Councillor Bastone about the availability of PowerPoints to the public at the community hub with a response from staff on page 3. A question from Councillor Grace on page 4 regarding the Bruny Island Boat Club lease with a response on page 4. A question from Councillor Midgley on page 5 regarding stage 2 of the Kingston Park development with an officer's response. A question from Councillor Wass on the banning of single-use plastics with an officer's response on page 5. A question, three questions from Councillor Bastone on page 6. Adventure Bay Road, Sawdust Road and the hire of council halls with officer's response to those three questions on page 6. And we have a question from Councillor Midgley on page 7 regarding youth space activities with an officer's response on page 7. We now come to notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion received. There were no petitions still being actioned. Page 8, there was a petition received regarding public furniture in Tinderbox containing 29 signatures. Do I have someone to move that the petition be received and referred to the appropriate department?
I move.
Report to Council. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Do we have a division? No. The petition is received. We now move to officers' reports to Council. 16.1 Food Truck Policy Revision, July 2021.
Acting Mayor, I'd like to move that the matter be discussed.
Councillor Wass would like to move that the matter be discussed. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor, I'm not sure who that was. Sorry, Bastone, I think. all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We move to discuss. Councillor Wass.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, there are a number of issues here, and I believe that it would be best to discuss it and let councillors have their say in relation to how they perceive this motion, because we have or can have up to three amendments, and of course the fourth amendment is then not even discussed, if there should be one. There are some issues that I have with it. The first issue, and I think we all got an email today which was quite correct in my belief, and that there is in the policy there is nothing regarding about noise levels, particularly when it's a food van, and I believe that noise level should be included. There should be a maximum noise level permitted, because I have heard some food vans which do have some old chunky noisy motors, if you like, in the background, and certainly if they were parked in front of a residential property or even an area where there were young people playing, I say young people because they make a lot of noise and run across roads, then that could disrupt or distract those people, and certainly if it's a residential area, that would certainly distract those people living at that home. The other issue that I have is with our policy, whereby if anyone has a lease agreement with council and leases that property, they must use utensils, cups, whatever, that are not single-use plastic. And yet there is nothing in our policy on that, and I believe that we should have an item in there to say single-use plastics are not permitted within Kingborough and only biodegradable containers, utensils, straws, etc. to be used, because I think if someone wants to come into Kingborough, and quite often these are not necessarily Kingborough residents, if they want to come in, chances are they'll already be in Hobart City Council, and Hobart has that policy, so that would not be a major impost upon those people. The other issue I'd like to raise, and we do have trading locations, and to not trade within 200 metres of established food businesses. I had a question put to me some months ago, and I did raise and ask the question how far they could operate from the food premises, and particularly Osborne Esplanade, and now we've got a 200 metres. I really believe that should be extended even further, and I would suggest 250 metres would be a better distance. You've got to remember that these food vans come in and, if you like, pick the eyes out of the market and then can go and come back, go somewhere else to pick the eyes out of that particular market. The bricks and mortar dwelling is there probably from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, so they've got wages to pay, they've got rates to pay, they've got leases to pay. And it just simply goes on and on and on. And, of course, these food vans generally are a one-person show or a two-person show, which can be the owner-operator, or if they're doing extremely well, may put someone else in. I just want to touch back one more time on the food containers. When I look at the maps and where they're going, the often sought after site, of course, is our beachfronts. We have a number of beaches ranging from Taruna in the north to at least Snug in this policy document, and they're all looking at beachfronts, and that's why I think that we need to prohibit single-use plastics. So my thoughts would be 250 metres away from any established food business, no single-use plastics, and that we should put a noise level on the food van itself, and that should be included in. Pardon me. That should be included in the policy document. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Woss. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. As I flagged with colleagues earlier today, I've had some contact from Kingston Beach traders concerned about the areas outlined for Kingston Beach. And I do generally agree with the representations that have been made to me, which is that where council's putting a significant amount of money into Kingston Beach to revitalise that area, and many of the traders, if not most, are investing significant sums along with council in their businesses, I don't think it's right that council allow, as Councillor Wass put it so well, to pick the eyes out of the market in an area so close to those businesses. I'm talking particularly about the area on Osborne Esplanade, which does present more problems than just that. I mean, it's opposite residential dwellings in very close proximity. It's in an area where we already don't have enough parking as well. And I'd point out that the parking is an issue at Christopher Johnson Park as well, with the popularity of the dog beach in order to allow potentially two food trucks to take up spaces there all day. But I accept from the comments of some of my colleagues today that potentially I won't get agreement to remove Christopher Johnson Park, which I'm willing to accept. But I would move that we amend the motion to remove the Osborne Esplanade spaces. I think we regulate the places that food businesses, bricks and mortar food businesses, can operate in this municipality through the planning scheme, and I don't think that that regulating food trucks in this way is any different to that. I think we owe it to traders that have invested a significant amount of money at Kingston Beach to support them, and I think we owe it to residents to make sure that they're in appropriate places, and I simply don't think that that location on Osborne Esplanade is an appropriate one. So I'm not quite sure, General Manager, what the mechanism is going to be once we've finished discussing, but I would certainly want to amend the motion to remove Osborne Esplanade as an area, however we manage that when the time comes.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you.
I've had my light on.
Oh, sorry, Councillor.
Yeah, that's
Grace.
Okay, go for it. No. Look.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I'll be quick. Thank you very much. I've just got a couple of questions, and my apologies to you, Councillor Grace. Quickly, is there any evidence that food vans cannibalise the business of other traders? And the preface of this question is just like, we're constantly looking to get more businesses into Channel Court, because with shopping centres, for example, the more businesses you have, it actually attracts people to stop, stick, stay and spend, because there's more variety, there's more choice, and therefore when you have more customers in general, more foot traffic, then you get more business for everyone. So do we actually have any evidence that food vans cannibalise local businesses?
Mr. Reeve, are you able to provide an answer on that?
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's certainly not a body of work that we've actually done to actually ascertain, and bearing in mind that not all councils actually have food trucks or food vans actually operating in their municipality, it certainly would be interesting to see, and I guess certainly other councils have various different permit conditions they put on their food truck vans as well at the same time. So it'd be difficult to actually give a definitive one way or the other in terms of the answer to your question.
Thank you for trying through you, Acting Mayor. It was academic, I know. My next question is about, within the policy, what counts as low noise emissions, and is it worth us trying to amend this to stipulate an actual decibel limit? Do other councils do that, for example?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I mean, what we've referenced here, and it's really just to try avoid duplication or avoid missing what we need to actually put in there, is we've referenced other various environmental laws, bearing in mind with this particular policy, it's mainly tied up with locations of food vans there, hours of operation, those types of conditions, as compared to the food they're serving or the noise levels, which is something that's actually managed through our environmental health area for all of our premises there. So we've I guess, been a little bit more silent on that part of it, if you like, as compared to trying to add that into the policy and then find that's actually covered through a different area.
Okay, thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, how do we enforce the parking and the road rules elements of this policy? And the example, the hypothetical that I'd use is, if someone were to email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au on a weekend and say, well, I've spotted a food vendor overstaying, they've been there for longer than 4 hours, or they're breaching the conditions in whatever way, how likely is it that a council officer, that we would have capacity to actually respond to that and enforce the policy that we have?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I mean, that's one of the difficulties of actually trying to manage any sort of policy there that which goes outside of council hours there, bearing in mind that a lot of the trade would actually happen on weekends, or in some areas there, depending on whether it's allowed, it might be happening after hours, out of business hours there. We don't have any compliance that is dedicated to that type of role. We certainly do deal with particular safety issues or issues that we might actually have in other parts of compliance, if you like, but it's on an exception as compared to as a rule type of thing. So we just don't have those resources to actually do that part of it.
Thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, I'm not actually a fan of mandatory sentencing and three strikes and you're out kind of policies, but are there any if a food van were to serially breach conditions and then you catch up with them, you know, nobody's there on a weekend to actually deal with it, but you talk to them three or four or five times, should there be an amendment in here, or do other councils have those kinds of so many strikes and you're out policies for serial offenders?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I don't believe any council has that type of policy there, but it's certainly something that when we're made aware of any particular issues with any food van there, whether they're trading outside their permit conditions or continue to do things out of hours, it's something we do investigate. I guess what I was alluding to before is that we don't have someone out on the beat, if you like, during those weekend hours that can actually instantly deal with a particular issue there, but we certainly follow up on any issues that are actually raised. I guess we've alluded to that in the policy as well, to actually say that we can grant a permit, but we can also take a permit away if people are actually doing the wrong thing.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. And so just briefly to my contribution on this part of it, I think that we should go with caution in terms of just assuming that food vans harm local businesses, harm the bricks and mortar businesses. My hunch is that they probably are complementary in many respects, in the same way that a shopping centre, when you offer more variety, it's more attractive to customers. So I think we should explore that more. Food vans, obviously cost less as far as start-up and food costs, and so they're good options for people who are expanding their business to a second location, etc. And so, yes, they are a more cost-effective option. Therefore, you could say that they give a competitive advantage to the food van rather than the bricks and mortar store. But I would say also that on the other side of that, they will be paying per permit for a year in Kingborough, it's $1,058 in permit charges. So that is a contribution that they're making for the roads and for the power and for the... Well, I mean, they're using their own power mostly, actually. So I just think that there are two sides to this story. I'm very sensitive to the idea that in residential areas you actually don't want high noise emissions and you don't want disruption to the neighbourhood amenity. But I also think that on our beachfronts, they should be vibrant, exciting places with a lot of people coming to enjoy the natural beauty, but also to enjoy the provisions that our small businesses can offer. And I do think that food vans are going to provide some economic benefit to the community. So I think it's a really interesting one. I think we need to be sensitive and cautious as we move forward, but at this stage I'm not necessarily convinced that we should definitely rule out... I mean, just going back to that idea of a kind of having a free market where businesses compete with each other and do, you know, they try and do... they offer the best services that attract customers. I think having more choice for customers is probably a good thing rather than a bad thing. So I await to hear what my other colleagues contribute with interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Grace.
I go back a few years when an application came before this council for a coffee van, food van at Christa Jonathan's Park, and this council voted unanimously not to allow that, then I think about a Councillor Street's amendment, and I think Councillor Street's amendment is right. I have no major problems with it, because these businesses in that area are paying big rates. And for somebody to come along and pull up in a van and pay $200 or $1,000, it just doesn't make sense. And that's what we debated some years ago. We've had a case with, I won't mention the name, but we've had a major issue with a guy that had a coffee van located on his property in the Esplanade. Now, that particular property was a commercial property, but it ended up in court. We've had other issues where we've got these vans pulling up with petrol generators, carbon monoxide, carbon, what is it caused through petrol motors, please help me, carbon.
Foxen.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Foxen. And can I just give you an example of that in the last few weeks at Snug, where the bone dentistry van pulled up and it only had a generator, and there was several people fell very ill from those, from that generator, because they were sitting and the generator was only a stone's throw away. All these food vans use generators for power, even though they may have gas. I'm not going to support this policy, because I think we need to really, really go back and have a look at it. We've got, in my instance, we've got a coffee van that pulls up at Snow at the foot of the hill and puts a sign up on the post, coffee van. No regulation. With conforming to the council planning, that's okay. But if we, and I've seen them along at the fork in the road, I've seen them pull up. I did follow some time back when the university had them, and they moved them on. If I'm correct, me if I'm wrong, but I believe the University of Tasmania actually moved them on because of the problems they were actually causing, not doing what we thought they would do. I have no problems with food vans going to functions and fairs and that sort of thing, or very isolated area, as long as it's safe. We have to support, and particularly like down where I live in Snow. I mean, I don't know the people that's got the van. It's just a small family affair, I suppose. They've obviously paid their money here at the council, but then you've got two, three people paying huge rates in Snow, and it's obviously losing money. And another example is the Margate Tavern of a morning. He's a nice guy. He's a hard-working guy. But there seems to me that I think we need a much fairer, if I can, policy. I think it's just too loose, if I can use that word, Madam Chair. I don't want to see people out of work. I create, and my motion in council is always for employment, but I just see some of these issues that relate to these food bans since now we started this policy, and it's just not going to work, and I'm not sure.
Time.
I'm not sure what the answer is. Thank you, time.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastow.
I think Councillor Mitchie might have had her light on before me.
You did, but then you turned yours off and back on again.
I did.
Yep.
Okay.
Comfortable for me to go to Councillor Mitchie?
Happy to go to Councillor Mitchie.
Councillor Mitchie.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Noting the policy was passed 2 years ago, noting that food vans started in our municipality and many municipalities across Tasmania and Australia really to add vibrancy and activation to areas, and perhaps noting now that it seems like we can't go anywhere without a coffee. Back in the day when you bought your thermos and your sandwich along, well, times have changed. Food vans and food trucks and mobile food vendors, it's what's happening. It's everywhere. It's all across places that we travel. Councillors have raised some really important points in regards to the locations. I support, I consider the points raised by Councillor Street in regards to locations for the Tyndall Christopher Johnson Park and the other one that's actually located in closer proximity to the businesses. I do have concerns in regards to that. The single-use plastics points that Councillor Wass has raised, noted that 2 years ago I tried to actually get that in the policy, but it wasn't supported by Council. Since then, we have seen a significant bylaws changing that are happening in Hobart, and other places have now taken on from that. And a lot of the food vans do actually have biodegradable and not using single-use plastic. So thanks to that bylaw change in Hobart, we're seeing an increase of that in the Kingborough food vans. So I'm wondering, I've got to ask a question from staff through you, Mayor, why didn't we actually just be bold and aspirational and include this as a requirement in this policy before us today?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I guess there's a couple of things to consider here. Certainly the difference between us and Hobart is Hobart went down the track of actually putting a bylaw in place there, so they have, if you like, a head of power to go and deal with single-use plastics there for the various businesses there, which we don't have. Obviously the state government's actually moving towards that, as you would see from the answer to the question that was raised on that matter there, so we expect that to happen in the next few years. One of the problems we do have with actually, even with the operators at the moment, and you're quite correct there with our survey, the operators here, a lot of them are actually using the compostable utensils at the moment. One of the problems we do have is actually where they end up going afterwards. So we know that people will get what they want to from these shops. They may hang around near the food truck van, but they may not. They may move away from there, and then the chances are that most of that stuff there will probably end up in either a normal bin or maybe a recycling bin, who knows. And that way, I guess, where they end up in the end is probably landfill. So you don't really get that gain out of it that you'd like to get. We certainly believe that once you start to get a statewide system in place there, that will actually be a really good driver for us looking at other options in terms of where we dispose of some of these, similar to the one that's been run down at Kingston Beach at the moment there for some of the compostables in that one area down there with one of the businesses at the moment there. So there is some options in terms of what we can and can't put in place there as we go forward there. It's just probably that we're not quite there yet, but fundamentally from an officer's perspective there, if council felt amenable to actually changing it so it was more of a mandated type application there, that would be fine. It just would be a difficult one for us to actually then have any head of power to do any compliance on.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. I have a few more questions through you, Mayor. So in regards to, just a few more points as well, so in regards to the compostable, the cafe that's doing that, that was actually through a council grant that a Sustainable Living in Kingborough did to support the business doing that. So I just wanted to make that note because it wasn't the actual business initiative. And the other one in regards to the Hobart and the bylaw, from my recollection, and I tried to find the emails from my research last time, but I'm quite sure that the City of Hobart had this actually in their food truck policy way before they even considered the bylaw. So that was something that they had in their food truck policy around no single-use plastic. So I don't think having the bylaw like does significantly make a difference in regards to whether we include this or not. And I guess really the bottom line is it's better to have that than it is to have the plastic that is not going to biodegrade, you know, in 100 years, whereas it may biodegrade, you know, and we're going to be moving towards FOGO in October and, yeah. So I know that I've had discussions with Mr. Reeve about this and I was happy to sort of leave it out, but now that Councillor Wass has raised it, I still, perhaps we can look at some wording around that council, that we recommend or consider or maybe don't make it a thing like straight away, that they move towards this within 6 months or something like that. I'd hope that we could include that in the policy, that we can move towards the single-use plastics within 6 months rather than passing the policy and actually having the expectation that businesses have it straight away, but they can move towards it within a certain time frame would be really great.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bastow.
Thank you. I probably should have spoken before Councillor Midgley since she stole most of what I was going to say. I'm just wondering with a 6.1 in the environment whether we couldn't change the wording to be dispose of waste and within 6 months phase out single-use plastics to give people a chance. That would be my thing, but after I think that's sort of a reasonable thing in case people have bought some, already got more cups. Okay. But my thing is on the food truck trading locations. Now, when you read through, they can operate for 3 days, 1 day, so many trucks, etc. But we have some trucks that operate more often than that, and they're, I think, particularly useful ones. And two of them are not mentioned here. The coffee van at the end of the Truganini track. It's absolutely fantastic in Taruna, and there is nothing else near there. When you come down off the track, it's great to be able to get a coffee. I'm one of these people that do like my coffees. It's the same on the Snug Margate walking track. The food van at the end of the Snug walking track is fantastic. Nice young people, biodegradable cups, etc. To my knowledge, they operate more than 4 hours a day, both of those van places. And I'm wondering why we have a four-hour-a-day limit. Could someone answer that, please?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I guess some of the limits there is just to try and get some equity amongst all the different food vans, so it gives other people the opportunity as well. Some of the areas there, you also got to realise that they might not be on council land there, so the one at Snug that's been mentioned a couple of times there is one of those, so they won't be operating under a council permit, so they won't have those types of conditions there. So it's only the ones which are actually going to be on council roads that we actually control there, that this policy actually refers back to. The one at Truganini that was mentioned at Taruna there is one that is a potential location. So that's obviously being used at the moment there. We also recognise that there's potentially some other locations that will come up because it's where we need to be agile to actually deal with ones that come up that still meet the requirements of the policy itself there. So the policy is actually worded in a way that allows us to sort of have a look at those ones here and make some judgments there as to whether or not they're appropriate or not appropriate.
Thank you, because, you know, the ones that open at 6 a.m. often run through to about 2, And there are quite a few of those around now, and I would hate to see them having to operate just for 4 hours. It's good to see Silverwater Park is on there, and I hope after we have the updated Silverwater Park that that's able to stay, because that's a much-loved community facility with when we have very little else down in Woodbridge. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I've got a number of questions. Firstly, how many food truck permits do we have roughly in a year?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, so for last year, it has gone up a little bit, but for last year we had 19 people who put in applications.
And is it that they come to the same locations every week on their set days, or do they get a permit and come just sporadically depending on the season or what else is going on, or do you have a sort of a, do we have an understanding of the pattern of behaviour of the food vans, if I can put it that way?
Mr. Reeve.
Through Acting Mayor, yeah, look, it is quite seasonal, and that's the reason why we've moved from just having a 12-month and a 3-month one to include a 6-month as well. So some people only want to operate in some of those peak months in particular there. So, for example, at the moment there you'll see some food trucks around, but not as many as you might see in the summer period or the spring period. Kingston Beach is by far the most popular location, and if anyone does ring up, they'll be wanting to actually try and operate down in that area. But there is other areas there that at the moment I guess haven't been on the radar for food truck vans there, but I guess depending on where council gets to tonight with this particular policy, maybe some of those other locations might actually end up becoming of interest to the operators.
So have you had any complaints that have been, or are you aware of council receiving any complaints from hospitality venues about the presence of food trucks? And if so, what sort of volume of complaints have we had? And what's the nature of them?
Mr. Reeve.
So it's predominantly been from the Kingston Beach businesses which we've received, I guess, the complaints about, and it's mainly been about, I guess, operating similar to some of the things that have been raised tonight, operating close to the other businesses there and effectively affecting their trade. And that's been the main complaints in that area there. I'm not aware of any other particular ones in other areas there, apart from people operating sometimes over there or outside their permit conditions, in which case we've actually chased them up from a compliance perspective.
So we haven't had, what about from members of the public, have we had noise complaints? Because we were talking about noise earlier.
Through your Acting Mayor, I mean, there was some in some of the earlier days there in terms of some of the noise complaints here, but once again, that was sort of dealt with from a compliance perspective. So, as I mentioned earlier there, there is some requirements in terms of noise and so forth there that's covered through some of our environmental laws there, and so that's chased up by environmental officers as well at the same time. In recent times, I don't believe so.
Okay. I note with interest that, and Clarence City Council, in fairness to them, they've only had food trucks and a food truck policy since the end of last year. But I thought it was interesting in their policy, or this isn't really a policy, it's more like a loose set of guidelines, it's only 5 or 6 pages, but they actually only have a 50 metre limit to proximity to businesses, and we have a 200, so I thought that was quite interesting. I'm interested in the comment within here about minimal alternative trading locations. It's sort of referred to throughout the discussion about where food trucks would be located. Can you just sort of define that for me? I mean, how do you define that? Does that mean if there are any other similar food venues, or there's only one other option, or...
I mean, I guess it's going to be a judgment call in terms of where that might actually apply. It's going to come down to saying, well, is there I guess, a lot of similarity in terms of what's actually being offered in that in a location more than anything. And I guess that's the reason why we put that in there. But it is a bit hard to define in terms of exactly what that might actually entail. And I guess that will come down to, I guess, some professional knowledge of the council officer there to make that judgment on that one.
So I just want to get an understanding of the process. When somebody's applying for a permit to operate here, do they have to say what sort of food they serve and where they want to apply for the permit and what hours they intend to operate?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we have to have all the information in terms of what they're intending to do with that particular business that they're going to operate there.
Okay. All right. So then does the similarity come into it anywhere? Because I noticed that there was something in the Clarence one about in their selecting their locations, they consider the similarity of the businesses in the area. Because I would have thought, I'm not sure that you can get a takeaway, and this is just an example, takeaway taco anywhere in Kingston Beach. But there might be a taco truck who might want to set up, and I can't see that there is then a conflict. Because if you want to take away taco for $5, as opposed to going and sitting down somewhere and having a meal, I would have thought they're two totally different experiences and customers.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. I guess we haven't gone down to that level, mainly because it's a bit of a moving feast, pardon the pun. But I've been sort of waiting to say that one. I do too many of them.
That's a dad joke.
Yeah, it is, I know. But I guess it's a fair point to actually say where the competition actually comes into play. You know, is it to do with the type of food that's actually being produced there? And I guess we tried not to get into that and complicate it too much there, because we also know that businesses can sort of change what sort of food they might be actually delivering as well at the same time. And does that then mean that, you know, the food truck would then not be eligible to actually serve in that area there, or vice versa? So I guess we've tried to keep it a little bit simpler than that. But it is a valid point in terms of what's been offered. And there's been a variety of different food offerings that have actually come out. So even down to pet food.
Mobile pet food.
So it's been quite interesting and quite challenging, but I guess it's always going to be a judgment point there for officers to actually make. And I guess this discussion is actually very useful for us, because, you know, then we can actually look at that and we have a good understanding of the feelings of the council as well.
So is there any particular reason why the Kingborough Sports Precinct area was not included as an alternative location?
Sorry, you're acting me. So apart from the fact that if we're running any business there that's selling food there, which will be just the sports centre itself, mm-hmm. So it still needs to comply with that. But if people were going to operate there anywhere else, once again, it's a little bit different to the last policy there. Rather than having precluded locations, we've left it a bit more open and said these are the locations that are allowed, but we would consider other locations provided it met the requirements of the policy there. So that would be an example of one that may or may not.
Okay. So if there was, you know, a big event up at the sports centre and somebody wanted to apply, there'd be nothing to preclude them from setting up there provided they met anything else. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep. And in relation to, in the areas that have been identified here, I noticed that one of the, let me just find the correct one, 6.1H. So 6.1H says, ensure the food truck serving area does not face the traffic side of the road. Now, in the majority of cases, that makes complete sense. But in the area at Spring Farm Road, where the food truck parks regularly, if they were to comply with this, then they would be creating more of a safety issue, because they would then have to turn the truck around and people would have to walk around the back, where it is a little bit more unsafe for customers to do that.
Yeah. So obviously in that situation there, we're not going to try and apply the letter of the law. I mean, the intention behind it is to stop people actually operating in an unsafe way, effectively. So, you know, in most cases there where you're facing the traffic there and there's vehicles coming there, it may be better for the business, but not so good for the people who are actually picking up the food, so to speak, there. So in that case there, they're actually offset off the road further,
yeah.
And they can actually operate safely in that fashion there, and have done in the past there, and it's similar sort of requirement we've had in the last policy.
Okay, I think that was all. Yeah, no, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I have one further question I forgot to ask in regards to a location. The southern end of Blackmans Bay Beach, I guess that could be a similar circumstance to what Councillor Reid has raised in regards to that cul-de-sac type area. Some residents have contacted to see if why wasn't that on the list, but I guess perhaps relating to that same answer, it doesn't preclude it. It means it could be possibly an option, or if you have any comments to that one.
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor. Certainly doesn't preclude it. As I said, it's not just a... there is some criteria in the policy there which would say, you know, it's not going to fit in that location for various different reasons. We would need to take into account, for example, parking in the area there, how much of a premium the parking's actually at there, is it appropriate to have a food van there that may or may not take up some of those parking spaces and so forth. I guess it's fair to say, as I've mentioned earlier there, most of the food trucks there have been interested in the Kingston Beach area. If the decision tonight is to say that's not an appropriate place to actually have, I would expect that maybe if they still want to operate in the Kingborough municipality, they may look at some of these other options as well.
Councillor Grace.
As I said, I just can't support this policy because it's...
Have you got a question, Councillor Grace?
Yeah, the question is to me that there's no clear policy because council is not policing its own policy. Manager of Engineering has just stated, and councillors have raised questions about their time limit.
Councillor Grace?
The question is, we're not policing our own policy.
That's a statement, not a question.
Pardon?
That's a statement, not a question.
We'll take it as a statement or a question. You can do what you like. I mean,
so you don't have a question that you'd like an answer for?
Madam Chair, I've never been one that can ask a question. To me, my question will be, this is a load of rubbish. I can't say that, Madam Chair. So what I'm trying to do is stay within my capacity.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I received an email from a gentleman in Osborne Esplanade this afternoon, and I am more concerned about his email than anything else. He has described how the noise of a small coffee van is tolerable, but when it comes to a larger food van, they're very loud and easily penetrate the double glazing of their house. The noise level of such generators is unacceptable on a prolonged basis, especially on weekends. It does sound like a major industrial activity. The relief of silence outside our home when they stop is profound, and working outside can be unbearable. This level of noise does not meet Objective 2 of the policy, which is to ensure food truck locations do not unreasonably interfere with the amenity of other users and the environment. And he asks, how does Council propose to resolve whether the generator noise is low or not? And could the policy specify that generators are not to face residential houses and are placed on the beach side of the food van? And I'm very concerned about his comments because if Mr. Reeve has just said to us that the noise levels are regulated by the environmental noise laws that we abide by, but obviously these food vans have not yet been stopped from making that high-level noise already. And also the noise regulations cover things like lawnmowers and chainsaws and that sort of thing close to houses. They generally don't operate for in excess of 4 hours constantly, very close to amenities like a beachfront where there are lots of people on the foreshore, as well as the houses close by, and many houses are being affected. So I just want to have clarity from the staff, not just to be told, oh, that's covered by the IMCA noise regulations. I would like to have a specific clause in this bylaw that specifically stops that sort of noise pollution and loss of amenity to the people that we're putting these vans next to. Is that a question? Or that's something I would like... Could I ask for that, please?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. Look, I guess if you wanted to actually add something in there that I guess mirrored some of the requirements that we would actually have through there, it's certainly possible to do. I just was, I guess, hesitant to actually start to go into other areas where it's covered in another way, if you like, because I guess then how... You know how much stuff to actually put in there, but I guess if that's the will of what council would like to see, there's no particular reason why some of that criteria couldn't just be added in there, just to make it a little bit clearer in terms of what that might actually be.
Well, that would certainly be my wish, and I think others around the table share my concerns. And I'm not sure whether we can cover that with an amendment tonight or whether we need to defer the matter and get that information from staff in order to have clarity when we put this motion. To that end, I would be prepared to ask for the matter to be deferred.
Do we have a seconder for Councillor Fox's motion? Councillor Cordova. Yep.
We're in discussion. Can we finish the discussion before we move a deferral so that we can get the other issues out?
No, I don't think we can, sorry.
Because I've got something else that I think I'd like to have inserted into the policy. And I also found an error.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Reid.
Sorry. I forgot to mention the question of park and rides. Now, it's pretty obvious that within here that they are not a designated... I got half a sentence in, Councillor Gross. I've got half a sentence into it. It's coming. Quicker than yours. Thank you for your help. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Councillor Grace, I'm warning you under Section 40 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 42A that I'm considering suspending you from this meeting because you're constantly interjecting. Constantly interjecting. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. It's pretty obvious in this policy that we don't intend for people to trade their food trucks at a park and ride location, but I am concerned, given what's the past practices that have happened, where there have been food vans that have parked at Hunting Field in the park and ride facility there, that they may continue to do that unlawfully. And I just wonder whether we... And there is the possibility that they may do it on Browns Road there when that park and ride is up and running, which you can kind of understand the rationale for. You know, we'll park here and get people to have a cup of coffee before they get on their bus. So I'm just wondering whether we need to have a specific sentence in here which says we exclude park and ride facilities because the food vendors are going to take up room.
Yep.
Of Mr. parking Reed. Spaces.
I guess in answer to that question, I certainly believe, in terms of the operating times of the park and ride, it makes perfect sense to actually say you shouldn't have food truck vans in there. That's not the purpose of that particular facility there. Some of the food truck vans obviously are operating after hours, if you like, or after the hours when it's a peak time for a park and ride. So there may be the opportunity in those locations, but I certainly agree with the fact that we wouldn't want people, if you like, operating there without that permit there, and we'd want to take fairly strong compliance action on that to actually move them on from there, because that flies in the face of what we're trying to achieve as well with the park and ride. So there is the opportunity, particularly with car parks there, where they are underutilised in certain times, if you like. So I wouldn't want to be too prescriptive with it, but we are well aware of the fact that we wouldn't want them operating in any of the peak times in any car park.
Do you believe it's warranted to have a clause in here to spell that out?
I think we could put it in there to make it clearer, and I think that would just give a bit more comfort that it's sort of been addressed within the policy there. So happy to actually take that on board and actually add that in there.
Thanks.
Could I ask a question?
Yes, Councillor Grace, a question.
Wasn't that more than a question?
No. So my thoughts on this in terms of debating or discussing the matter, I do have some sympathy for the existing businesses that are there in bricks and mortar. I do, however, know that it's quite nice sometimes, particularly when you're at Dog Beach, to be able to go and grab a coffee from the coffee van in your gumboots and your puffer jacket and not have to kind of traipse up to the other end of the beach. So I do think food trucks have a purpose and do serve a different market sometimes. So I wouldn't be keen to rule them out from Kingston Beach entirely. I do have sympathy, though. I'm glad we've got the 200 metre buffer. I would consider increasing that if that was something that councillors were supportive of. In terms of the phase-out for single-use plastics within 6 months, I would prefer to align with what the state government are doing. And I think in terms of confusion or trying to avoid confusion, I would be hesitant to include that at this point in time. Not sure how we would police that as well. And also not sure how we would police the noise levels, but certainly have sympathy for residents if generators are being used that are too noisy. So we have discussed now. Should we go back to the
typo I found? Sorry. I love typos. It is in 6.1F. Let me just go back to it. Buses in the second last line of it, but not limited to taxis, buses. It's got two S's, it only needs one. But I just wondered if it should say, but not limited to taxi, bus and loading zones, because it's not just the buses, but you don't want them in bus zones, regardless of whether a bus is there or not. Because if a food truck's in a bus zone, a bus can't pull up.
Yep.
So, Councillor Woss, you moved that we discuss. Would you like to sum up? Is that how it works?
Don't need to? Discussion, no.
Okay.
I was after an indication through you, Acting Mayor, as to whether Councillor Fox and Cordova are going to continue with their deferral. If not, I'll move a motion.
I'd be guided by staff because there's a number of issues they've stated that they would like to come up with a clause or they would like to embellish or they'd like to clarify for us. If the staff are comfortable for us to proceed based on the discussion tonight and get the general drift, I'd be quite amenable to not put a motion to defer and get it out of the way. But if you would prefer us to defer it to give you time to prepare the documentation, I'd be happy to do that too.
Mr. Reeve, do you have some advice on what you've heard throughout the discussion?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Look, I'm pretty clear in terms of what the intentions are with Council for some of the aspects of it. Not so clear on some of the other aspects, so bearing in mind that there's some potentials in terms of trading locations there that's been talked about, and I can hear there's a little bit of variability around the table there in terms of what that might actually be. So I probably would need some sort of clarity on that aspect of it. Some of the other aspects is it's just a matter of actually making some amendments to the actual policy document itself there. And it may be easier then just to say, well, we can bring that back to council. Yeah, there were those amendments in there, and it's then very clear to council there and makes it fairly clear cut to them. But the trading locations, I definitely would need some more clarity on, I think.
Councillor Fox.
Sorry, I'll move that the matter be deferred. Thank you.
And do I have a seconder? Yeah. Councillor Grace. So moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Grace, that the attached food draft policy 4.12 be deferred. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? The deferral is approved. Thank you for that debate, councillors. We now move to page 32, nomination for membership to the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. Do I have a move by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Bastone? Councillor Reet.
Thank you. I think this can be best summed up by our Community Development Officer, Ms Alderfox, said that Orange, that this committee is the new black because everyone wants to get on it all of a sudden, which is fantastic. This vacancy came about because we had one of our members had moved positions, so we have a replacement. She actually has been to a meeting as an observer. She's very well qualified, and we welcome her contribution.
So the motion moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Bastone, that Claire Richardson be appointed as BAPTCARE representative to the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Nomination is approved. I now move to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The recommendation is that by absolute majority, Council move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, COVID-19 rental relief, and sale of land for non-payment of rates. So I have a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Council will now move into closed session. The open session of Council is adjourned at 6:47 p.m.